Normally, in Dungeons & Dragons, you don't get a magical bag right away. It may be a cursed bag, you know? We never know. So, it could be, it should be a cursed bag. Because their first level, they're just learning about the adventure, and already they're getting a magical item. So, they run out, you take the stuff. Now, the guy is not unconscious or anything. So next round, he will be facing off against Florsheim de Bogglebeard and Foghorn Pete.
If I go back, I'll endanger myself, and then I can maybe help my friends, but I don't have any more spells, and I'm not very good in a fight. Oh, but I could talk the dwarf down. That might work. He did decide to attack, but he might listen to me. Okay, I'm gonna go in and I'm gonna try to talk him down.
Alright, that's a good strategy.
Maximilian, keep going. Run, run, run. Run, Maximilian, run.
And I'll just run. We're safe. Like, we're gonna make it out okay. And I run, and I'm looking. What's easier than carrying a girl is having an animal carry her. I'm looking for an animal. Do I see one?
Well, let's see. Let's roll. Let's make an intelligence check. See if you can spot an animal that's actually free. A 15, you fail. You see a horse. Looks like a perfect horse.
Great, I'll run right to that horse.
It turns out that the horse is tied up and it's someone else's horse, but he thinks it's a free horse, so he runs towards it. Okay. Is he that dumb? He's not that dumb. He just thinks there's a way around it. He's kind of dumb. Okay. Anyway, meanwhile, back inside. Let's see here. Okay, Foghorn, what are you going to do? You picked his pocket.
I know. I'm going to cut his armor off. He's got a bunch of armor on, right? I'm going to just, and I'm kind of behind him to the side. I'm just going to take my dagger, and I'm going to cut his armor off so that his armor falls out around about him, and he'll lose the will to fight.
Okay, that's interesting. If he's occupied with the Bogglebeard, that might work. Let's give that a remote possibility. Why don't you make another sort of sneak skill? Try to sneak behind him.
Okay, here I go. I got to roll 1 or 2 on a d6. Oh, 3. Oh no, but I have great dexterity. Does that help? That might help you.
It does help you a bit. But we're going to say that that failed. So you can swing at him normally, you can stab him normally, but you can't get into a position where you can cut off the straps of his armor. Florsheim, what do you plan to do?
I'm a dwarf. He's a dwarf. I'm going to talk to him in dwarf. I'm going to say, dwarf, peace. Stop. Let us not fight in this place of respect. I do not draw blood. You have drawn blood. And I put down my... I open my arms to him, and I say, believe me, this symbol, and I draw out the cleric symbol that I took from the cleric's neck, this symbol is the cause of all your problems. The blight that you have suffered is from this. Stop fighting me, I will stop fighting you. Together, we can make this work.
Sounds good. Mirror Man shows up about this time and says,
everyone hold! The constable is coming!
Except,
Robe Talk, everyone hold! But I put on a voice. I'm like,
everyone hold! The constable is coming!
It's just me putting on a voice. He's my charisma.
Okay, well, let's roll your charisma, see how convincing you are. Oh, he sees right through the lie. Not only that, he sees the fear behind the lie, and he's emboldened. Now, Florsheim, let's roll your charisma and see if you can talk him down. Oh, he's not buying it. He's going to take a swing at you, man. And he goes first. Misses you. He missed you. At the last minute, you duck, whoosh, and the swing goes over your head. Now, Halfling, you are set up to attack him. Well, I guess he suffered subdual damage from being bashed with the shield. So let's roll that damage. Got 22 hit points. And so far he's suffered 4 kind of bruise hit points. Subdual damage. Basically, it goes away after the end of this encounter. Okay, and now we're going to see if the halfling hits him. Yeah, a 20. Boom! The little halfling hit with his short sword. 3 points of damage. The guy's down to 15. Alright, next round. Let's run. I say we all run. I want to run right out of here. Yeah, I'm gonna... Wow. Watch. Let's run. Let's run right out of here. Gotta get out of here. Gotta get out of here now. Quickly. He won't listen. He won't listen to me and the dwarf and all this. I gotta go. I know. Florsheim. No. I'm Florsheim. Foghorn. Take your dagger and run over there and threaten to slit the guy's throat unless he stands down. Remember in the sleep spell, it says, and I quote, a sleeping creature may be killed with a single blow of any edged weapon, regardless of his hit points. So you go. You run over there. You're fast. You probably get to go first. And you take out your dagger, and you put it around the cleric, maybe, or the nearest one. Maybe the... Who would he like the most? Probably the cleric. And you say, back down, or I kill him. Alright. We got a 4... Character's got a 4 and he got a 2 for initiative, and then with your plus, you do go first, Foghorn Pete. You run over there, you scream your threat, and he lowers his weapon. Or I guess I should roll, but I think he would lower his weapon. I'll roll his morale. And I think if I roll high for you, then that's good. Actually, this is also a situation where I think I would let them go. Like, even without rolling as a DM, because they would kind of all die if I didn't. I mean, probably. I guess they did some damage to him. He's just got 15 hit points left. But he's got good armor. He's much higher level than them. I mean, they did just loot all the guy's stuff. So, but one more round of facing this guy, and one of them will go down. One more hit, and he will just, you know, he does D8 plus 2 damage. And he did 5 last round, and the dwarf only has 4 points left. Yeah, he lowers his sword, and then the next round he can wake him up and chase him after them again. All right, I think that's it. That's the conclusion. And also, I rolled for his morale. I wanted to roll a 9, but I rolled a 7. That's pretty good. Foghorn, good old Foghorn Pete. Quite the adventurer today. So, this is the way it goes down. You guys slowly, so Foghorn Pete, you run over. Oh, you went for the cleric. No. I take out my dagger, but I look, and I see, I kind of, like, take my dagger, and I kind of point it around at the guys, and I see, like, who does he care most about? Okay, well, you're going to use your intelligence to check that, and he does clear most about the cleric, and I rolled for your intelligence. At least that's what you believe. Okay, I'll go for the cleric. And as a DM, I rolled a 6 on his intelligence. His intelligence was a 9, and he made his intelligence check, so he guessed correctly. Just using, you know, sort of social clues, how upset the guy was about the clerical symbol and everything. And how do you guys get out of there? Okay, now is the moment for my intelligence to really shine. I know that it seemed like it was somebody else's idea to threaten those guys and use them as a hostage, but instead, I come over and I say, "All right, first you, Florsheim, let's go, walking out. And now you, Mr. Dwarf, I want you to walk all the way, put your weapons here, put your weapons down here, and now I want you to walk all the way to the other side of the room." Does he do it? He's not willing to put his weapons down here because he doesn't want you to take them. Put your weapons on the bar, we won't take your weapons. Okay, he puts his weapons on the bar. And now, once you walk over there, he just stands by the bar.
You better walk over there right now. And I kind of glower at him, and I, like, sort of pretend to cast a spell.
This might break it. This might break your lock on him. He grabs up his weapons and he goes to attack you. Damn. Gosh, I was rolling his charisma. He has a good charisma of 16 to persuade the guy, but I rolled an 18. Ah. He didn't make it. He's supposed to make under your charisma. Okay, what are you going to do, Foghorn? Looks like the dwarf has had second thoughts and he wants to attack you guys after all. Now, Florsheim de Bogglebeard is already outside, so it's just Foghorn and Mirrorman who are left inside. Foghorn, what are you going to do?
I run for it. I just totally run for it. He's not going to get me. He's not going to get me. Run. I just say run.
All right, well, you go first with a 5. And you make it out of there, and Mirrorman Cloudhair, he goes before you. He picks up his weapons, and he moves towards you, but you are close enough to the door that he won't get to you unless he charges, which he probably would do. Oh, man. A two. I can't believe it. He missed you. Oh, thank God. Thank gosh he missed you. Because I like you. I like this character. He would have been dead. All right. He missed you with a 2. And you spin. He runs. He charges you. Grabs his axe as he goes. Extends his whole body. Flies towards you. You deftly step aside. Boom. He thuds into the wall. He could have hit you with a 5 or better, and he rolled a 2 out of 20. Pretty good. So, you make it outside, and much to your surprise and interest, you see Maximilian Overdrive on the back of a horse with a sleeping barmaid at his over his saddle, and he says,
"Yeah, innit? Here we go. All right, I got a bearing, and this is the way."
And he chooses direction to go out of town. And Mirrorman, you happen to know which direction the ruins are. You can actually see the ruins from the town. And it turns out I'm going to give him a 1 in 4 chance of choosing the right direction. So that would be 1, 2, 3, 4. So he's actually going the opposite direction, away from the ruins, which could be construed as being intelligent, because if the town sets up a posse to come after you or whatever, they'll go the opposite way. But it also means that you might take longer time to get to the ruins. However, you have a horse.
Right. Yeah, we have a horse. So I'll quickly get everybody to put all their heavy, take off their armor, just quickly put it on the horse. I figure we've got, like, you know, no more than, like, 1 minute or a couple minutes. Oh, I wish I had a whole portal. I could cast that spell. Maybe the guy has it in his spell book. I'll just glance through to see if he's got it. I rolled a hit for his spells. He has spell number 1 and spell number 6. Let me just check in the book and see what those are.
Okay, no, he doesn't have hold portal. He happens to have charm person and magic missile. Now, charm person would be a great spell for this situation. And maybe, I mean, you could read it right out of the book. Charm the dwarf. But he's probably already woken up some of his comrades, or one of them, or something.
Right, but we have all their stuff. So, I'm gambling that we'll be all right. We quickly, we duck off the main roadway here, like sort of behind a house, and get out of, and then we quickly take off, anybody takes off their armor, because we gotta just run. We gotta just get out of here as fast as we can. And we use a horse with the woman. It's so great that Maximilian got it. He'll have to tell us about it next time. And we cut out of there. We cut out of there in the fading, autumn light.
And there you have it. The story of the solo retro group adventure. The solo group adventure with the the party of 4, the idolaters. Yeah, what should the name of these guys be? But they made it. They made it out, and they actually got a bunch of experience points. So I guess I'll calculate the experience points. They got at least 100 experience. I think they got around 100 experience each. They got 200 actual gold. And then they got more than that in, you know, because then they got the magic bag and they get the value of that experience and then the other stuff. So, yeah. So they'll probably each get at least 100 experience for that little moment, and they're off on the adventure. So next session, hopefully, we'll actually start the adventure in the book and see how they do. All right. My name is Fritz Donnelly, and this has been a solo group adventure with, well, maybe they're called the 12-sided dice? With the 12-sided dice. You know, because each is so complex. There's only 4 of them, though. Yeah, why not? With the 12-sided dice. Thank you for listening. See you soon. Listen to you soon. Hear you soon. Welcome back to the solo retro group adventure, part 2. I was thinking of calling this group the Party Party, because they are a party of adventurers who like to turn the adventure into a party for themselves, you know? It's my birthday, I'll cry if I want to, I'll cry if I want to, I'll cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you. That kind of thing. Welcome back to the adventure from the basic Dungeons & Dragons book. So far we started off in the inn, in the village, and already stole a bunch of items from a competing party who was about to presumably go on the same adventure or a similar adventure that we were about to go on, because they were in the same inn getting the same flavor text from the DM. So presumably they were competitors, and fortunately we put them to sleep and then took off. And we have about a 90-minute lead on them before the sleep spell wears off. Unless they are shaken awake by somebody. And it just so happened that when we left presumably a member of their party. I think they were all wearing the same insignia, so we knew they were organized. A member of their party this dwarf had come in and he woke them up. So, I mean, presumably he woke them up. So maybe we've got like 5 minutes. But we have a horse, and presumably, again, it's likely that they don't have a horse, because they were also first level. Although the dwarf, who we decided was their leader, he was a higher level, fourth level, as I happen to know, as the dungeon master. And I just, you know, I threw that in there, because why not? Why not have a bunch of first-level characters be led by a fourth-level character who just bosses them around and has them die for him, you know? Wouldn't that be how we would do it if we weren't playing the characters in a collaborative group setting, you know? Early signs of capitalism. And what did we do about those early signs of capitalism? Well, we robbed from the rich to give to the poor. Foghorn Pete, World Swimmer, took some of their stuff and made off with it. And so now we're riding on a horse that then Maximilian Overdrive, the Claymore on the Moor, stole. And he has an unconscious woman across the saddle. She worked in the bar. She was the barkeep or the waitress, depending on how you look at it. She was bussing some mugs when she was affected by the sleep spell. And Maximilian just picked her up and decided to dedicate himself to her based on a small brooch that she was wearing that contained a symbol that he had seen. It's a birthmark that's on his body, and it's the same symbol that he claims to have seen on the night that he was born, because he was born outside in the open air, and as soon as his eyes popped out, he opened them, looked up into the sky, and saw this constellation, and he has that same birthmark on the back of his head, and he shaves the back of his head so that the birthmark will be visible, and it happens to be the same shape as around this woman's necklace. It's a fairly common shape. It's kind of the yin-yang symbol, except just the yin, say. Or just the yang, you know, just that kind of round circle, and then with like a little curl, like a comma. It's kind of like a comma. He has a comma in the back of his head. And this woman has a necklace that happens to have a comma shape on it. And she's still sleeping at the moment, and they're riding on their horses. Now we're going to resume the adventure. That's a little recap of what we did in the what happened in the first session. Now, I play all the characters, and I'm the dungeon master, and I play the player who plays the characters. So far, I haven't gotten that much into the role of the player who plays the characters. I've been mostly the dungeon master and the characters. You know, we'll see what happens. It's a lot of people to keep straight in somebody's mind already, you know? And they each have different voices, so I had to make notes about how they talk, especially if they talk to each other and, like, somebody interrupts. It can be, yeah, it can be chaotic. So we have to try to maintain a kind of a handle on this. I'm playing a group game alone. It's just me playing it. I'm having a great time. Okay, I hope we're having a great time together. All of us. So here we go, without further ado. So the way this goes, there's an adventure, and there's text that's written down, and I started reading the text, and the text had placed these guys in the Golden Dragon, I think. And, you know, I changed it slightly, Gold Dragon Inn, and I changed the text slightly, you know, I customized it for this group, just a little bit, you know, which is a typical thing that somebody would do if they're, like, running a game. You know, you use this as a kind of a guideline, and then you branch out from there. What happened, though, during the reading of that text was that the players decided to act in the space where they were hearing the text. Like, so they decided to, you know, I said the inn is busy, filled with ruddy townsfolk and other adventurers who are eating, drinking, laughing, and having a splendid time. So the inn is busy, filled with ruddy-faced townsfolk and other adventurers who are eating, drinking, laughing, having a splendid time. When they heard that there were other marks there, then Foghorn Pete decided to pick somebody's pocket. Then he noticed, and then Mirror Man cast a sleep spell so that Foghorn wouldn't be just killed right away. Because, you know, these guys are just starting out, and they're very weak. One blow from a sword or a dagger, and that's it. They're done. So he cast a sleep spell just to, you know, make sure nothing violent happened. And ended up putting everyone to sleep, which seemed then like the ideal opportunity for Foghorn Pete to just clear out everyone of all their stuff. And Florsheim de Bogglebeard, who has a thing against clerics, decided to raid the cleric, you know, and holy symbols and things like that. I don't know if he's an atheist or if he has other gods, you know, and he's a true believer and he needs to stamp out the blasphemy. We'll find out as his character develops, but for whatever reason, he targeted the cleric, and he stole the holy symbol, and then right at that moment when things were... Oh, and then that was a moment when Maximilian was, you know, he was pacing the room, and the barmaid just fell asleep and fell right into his arms, which he understood as a sign to him that he was here to protect her. So he grabbed her and ran out with her after another guy showing up, a dwarf with some experience, a kind of a veteran fighter who came in and seemed like trouble, and they, you know, happened to belong to the group that the party had just fallen put to sleep and was in the middle of robbing blind. Okay, so last adventure we were able to get through about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs of the adventure, and then a whole scenario developed. Let's see how many paragraphs we get through tonight. We're going to try to get through 3 pages. Let's see what happens. I'm going to modify the flavor text a little bit to encompass our new situation. Originally it reads, "It's morning and you're off to the castle. It lies only 3 miles from town, just a healthy walk past a local farmer's fields. As you follow the dirt road past the farm, you greet the workers tending the crops. It's a lovely summer's day and all seems peaceful." Okay, well, I happen to know that you left the inn in a hurry, and not the next day after hearing about this and having the night to think about it and sleep and prepare yourselves mentally for this arduous adventure up ahead. No, you left right then with another, having upset another group of adventurers, and they're on your heels, presumably. And you're probably moving as quickly as you can. I think putting as much of your equipment on the horse as possible and running alongside. So that's the plan, right, guys?
That's right, I'm your man, Cloudhair. I have an intelligence of 18. I'm, like, brilliant. And, you know, we want to move at the fastest rate that we can, which, yeah, involves putting our stuff on the horse. And you know, this poor girl who's asleep, this woman, young woman, on the back of the horse, that you could say that we've kidnapped her, but I'm just going to let her wake up and decide for herself if this is a kidnapping, a wonderful opportunity, or just another strange event in a life full of strange events for her. I'm not going to presume to make that judgment. I'm going to let her decide for herself. You could say I'm an early feminist in the fantasy realm, and the way I dress may be androgynous, or it might be very feminine or very masculine, depending on how you look at those things. I'm going to let you be the judge of that. Can you see me? I have curly hair. I'm wearing robes. Under my robes, I have my silver dagger, my special silver dagger, in case I'm faced with creatures who can only be harmed by a silver dagger, like maybe a werewolf. And I have one spell that I know well, which is called sleep. But we stole a spell book from the other magic user. There's a spell in that book. And if I have time, I'll sit down, I'll open that book, and I'll see what that spell is. I'll cast my read magic spell and read it, and I'll know. Then I'll have another spell. Now we're proceeding. We're going along together. We put as much stuff as we can on the horse, and we're trotting alongside. 3 miles will go as fast as we can. I estimate at our current rate of movement, we'll probably make 3 miles in approximately 24 minutes. Given that we'll have at least a few minutes head start on the other guys, and they probably won't be able to move as fast as us because they'll be carrying all their stuff, and I don't think that they could afford a horse, especially not after we took all their gold. They will probably take about 47 minutes to get to us, which gives us a difference of 23 minutes head start on them after we arrive there, which is basically 2 turns in game time plus 3 rounds. So, you know, as long as the DM is, like, aware of that. Yeah, yeah, okay, great. Thank you, Mirrorman. Next. So, it's late afternoon. The sun is going down in probably an hour. You're off to the castle. The horse is trotting quickly and juggling. And Maximilian has ridden a horse before, maybe? In it. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I like to ride a horse. And I'm making sure it's not too bumpy for the woman on my lap, who wakes up after about 15 more minutes. Is that right? Let me check the duration of sleep. So this was something I never did when I would play this game. We never really did. Timekeeping, you know, keeping track of the time. And also, like, encumbrance, movement rate, things like that. We just skip all that stuff. But it's kind of fun. It adds a certain strategic flavor. So anyway, I just looked it up, and I remember what I rolled. The spell will last for 90 minutes. And I would say I think only 5 minutes had passed so far, and it's only going to take them 24 minutes to get to the thing, so that's 30. So they still have 60 minutes of her being asleep after. So she'll wake up on the adventure, presumably, once they've already gotten to the town. So I was going to have her wake up on the way, but it turns out that she won't wake up yet, which is just as well. It's probably more interesting to wake up later anyway. Okay, it's late afternoon. As you pass the local farmers' fields, they, they're tending their crops, and they wave a hello to you and notice, with some evident concern, that you're riding quickly, and as much as you
try to put a brave face on it. They're a little suspicious of you riding off with a woman slung over the side of your horse.
Mirrorman Cloudhair, I just make a big wave, you know, a big and a happy well-met good day, gentlemen. We're just taking our friend here to a local healer. And I'll try to convince them I have a high charisma, a charisma of 16.
Okay, so I'm going to roll to see if you do that. It's like a charisma check with a slight penalty, let's say, because maybe somebody recognizes her and would know who she was. I rolled a 6. So somehow you managed to alleviate the suspicions of the workers who are closest to the road. The landowner himself sits atop a wagon, watching his men. And he's the one who's suspicious. He chats with you before you continue onward. And he buys your story that you're just taking a friend to a local healer. He mentions that he has no problems with monsters. And if any lurk in the nearby ruins, that they stay there, like respectable monsters should. Every night, however, he carefully locks up all his animals. After bidding him a good day, you continue toward the ruin. As you approach, you see that the walls are jagged and full of holes, and a few large stone blocks have tumbled to the earth. They are stone walls. There's a gateway in the center of the front wall. It's empty, so it's an open gateway. And the doors that used to be in that gate are lying nearby on the ground, flat. The gateway seems to be the easiest entrance through the wall, but there's also a 10-foot-wide hole off to the left, which could be another entrance. And you do not see any other entrances, and the rest of the wall is crumbling. And the outer area has no other interesting features. There's a sheer cliff, the face of a mountain, rising at the north edge of the ruin. So it's kind of a ruin that's built out from the side of a mountain. And there's only really the front, I guess, and maybe the sides, which seem to be walled in. So, what do you guys want to do?
I'm going to slow the horse down and take the horse, take our fair lady, my fair lady, as it happens to be, a sling over my shoulder, carefully, so carefully, get down to the ground. It seems like we should walk through the big door, but obviously that's a trap. So we should go through a side door, the side hole. That's what I say.
What about you, Foghorn Pete? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm great at climbing walls, and I love doing it. I could see myself climbing up that wall. And
now it's rickety, you know. It's stone, but the stones can fall. It's a 50-foot high wall. So you would have to make 5 climbing checks successfully in order to get up the wall. And, you know, you have a decent climbing skill, but the chances are you would fail one of those checks and fall. And then you take some damage from the fall. You know, I think it could kill you. So that's risky.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess I could look around and see if there's a trap. I have some skill at checking for traps. Maybe I'll look and see if there's something wrong. If it is a trap, like Maximilian said, in the front, there.
That sounds good. It'll take you to check that whole area for traps would take you 10 rounds, or one turn. So that's a little while. I don't know if you have that time to kill.
Okay, Foghorn.
Well, regardless of whether or not you check for the traps, the way forward towards the gateway brings you past these doors, the gateway doors that have fallen onto the ground. And you can see a dark sort of shadowy area underneath there. The path through the rubble passes the fallen door, and as you carefully approach, you notice some slight movement beneath it.
I see movement. I know what to do. I see movement. I take out my short bow, and I cock an arrow, and I'll point it at the hole in the ground. If somebody's going to come out, they're probably...
is like this could be somebody who's tunneling, is trying to escape from the dungeon, or it could be somebody who's like popping out to try to get behind us as we walk by and like attack us from behind. So I don't want to shoot until I can tell if it's kind of like somebody interesting to talk to, or just a vicious person, or creature who's just after us, you know. Or maybe there's just rats. I don't mind rats. I won't kill small animals just because they're dirty or unpleasant. So if it's rats, I say, fine. You know, I don't live here. It's not my affair. But I'm ready with the bow anyway.
Mirrorman, you've cast your spell for today. What are you doing anything? Is anyone else taking any specific action? I noticed on your sheet you have a collapsible 10-foot pole. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I have a pole. And normally people have a 10-foot long pole. It's hard to take through doors. Doors might only be 8 feet high. And then you have to turn it, you know, at a 45-degree angle. Or just poke it through if the door's even lower. You know, poke it through and whip it back. I've just fashioned a pole using my great intelligence that just screws together in 1-foot long sections. So the pole can be anywhere from 1 feet to 10 feet long, and you just screw it together in these 10 feet. And it's like each section just screws together. Normally I keep it in, you know, a couple of sections, like sections of 2 all screwed together, or 3, you know. So right now I think I'd keep it in 2 sections, 2 5-foot long poles, and then just screw them together. So I'll go ahead, I'll screw those sections together, and I'll take my 10-foot long pole and I'll poke at the doors, you know, standing behind Foghorn Pete, of course. I'm actually just going to hand this pole to Florsheim, to Bogglebeard. Florsheim, would you poke the doors with the hole? And, you know, we're taller than you, so you, like, if you, Florsheim, you're the dwarf, if you go in front with Foghorn, he's a halfling, you're like, you guys are like level one, you know, low level, and then above you is us, Maximilian and myself, at this higher level. I could always throw a dagger over your head in the event of an emergency, and, you know, Maximilian can just swing over your head when he has a two-handed sword. Doesn't that sound like a good idea, Florsheim? Here you go, here's the pole. What, you want me to take the pole and poke the door of the on the ground with this pole? What? I'm a dwarf. I don't just take your instructions, but it does seem like an interesting idea. However, I'm a man who goes under the grounds all the time. I don't want to have a pole in my head messing me up. So I'm going to draw my shield, which is stolen from around my back, and take out my hammer, and I'm gonna walk closer, ready, while I'm being covered from behind by Foghorn with his arrows.
All right, very well. Suddenly, the ground along one edge moves. A hole appears. There's something under the door. You see a large, worm-like monster stick its head out of a hole under the door. It has 8 long tentacles in a circle around its mouth. It doesn't come all the way out, just far enough to attack you, Florsheim.
That's all right. That's not a problem. We're ready. I fire my arrows. Bing! I'll charge around to the side and swing from the side, trying to get to a flanking maneuver from the other side. I know he's just poking out the hole, but I've got a long sword, and these are tiny guys. Maybe I can do it.
All right, well, you'll go last. So first I'll roll your initiative. And the creature goes first, although you actually get to go even before him, Foghorn, because you have all these. I rolled a 2 for the creature and a 1 for you guys. But with your benefits, Foghorn, you get a +3 to your initiative, so you go to 4. So you go first. You will often go first.
That's so great. I'm so quick and speedy, and I roll. And it's like the movement comes out, and I see that it's a creature, and it's gross. And it's not a rat, but it's really coming for us. And it's coming for, you know, for Florsheim. And I'm just going to fire, like, just right over his shoulder, hoping not to hit him. And just boom. just trying to poke it in the eyes, and I rolled a 17 to hit, which would hit armor class of a -1, and so I hit it with my arrow, and you hit, roll damage. I rolled 6 on the 6-sided dice, 6 damage. That's exciting. It's, you did hit it in the eye. You hit it. It shrieks in a kind of vocalless way. It's a little bit like a creature from Cthulhu. And it strikes. All of these tentacles lash out at the poor dwarf. Oh my goodness. And what is your armor class now, Florsheim? Well, thanks to the shield that I've stolen from the cleric, it's probably a holy magical shield as well, I don't know. But my armor class is only 2, is a 2, which is wonderful. So, okay, armor class 2, and this guy has this many hit dice, so he needs to roll a 14 or better to hit you. One hit. He strikes you with 10 tentacles. 2 hits. 3 hits. 3 hits. He hit you 3 times. Oh no, what can I do? Well, interestingly, the attacks do no damage, but you have to make a saving throw. He lashes out with you with his tentacles. 3 of them in concert wrap around you. One grabs your neck, another around your ankle, and the third around the arm, your arm, as you swing down to bash it with your warhammer. And as they lash around you, you feel a tingling. It's almost like a jellyfish sting. Then, oh, make 8 hit rolls for the carrion crawler, not 10. Sorry about that. Well, still 3 hit, I think, because one was the number 7. So, yeah. Okay. Oh, we'll be divided among the 2 closer opponents. I think you're the only one within range, Florsheim. Although this guy's long. He's 9 feet long. Okay, so this is what he'll do. Let's just change this slightly. He pops out of the hole. He lashes at you, Florsheim. 2 tentacles lash across you. Then he lashes a tentacle around your neck, dwarf, and then another one around your leg. And then he pulls your head, he pulls his head away from you, and they just lash across you, and they leave you tingling. And you fight against the poison. You know, it's kind of a chemical battle. Your body fights against the poison. Meanwhile, he lashes out at the halfling. He lashes out at you, Foghorn, because, you're quick and you're down there and you fire, but he's fast and he's 9 feet long and he quickly moves his entire bulk up out of the hole, lashes the dwarf, and then spins around and lashes at you and hits you too. So both of you guys have to make a saving throw versus paralysis. So dwarf, your saving throw versus paralysis is great. You just have to roll a 10 or better on a 20-sided dice. And halfling, it's the same. You just have to roll a 10 or better. Okay, so for the dwarf, the first 20, you save. And a 15. So the dwarf is not affected. You're not affected by the paralysis, Florsheim. It stings a little bit, and you feel a numbing, but then it quickly goes away. And a 14 for the halfling, and you're not affected either. None of you are paralyzed. How lucky you are today. And, you know, if I were DMing this against other people, or if I weren't being so strict about, like, trying to really follow what the dice say, I might make one of them not save. Because isn't it more exciting if somebody gets paralyzed? If you can get paralyzed? Why not get paralyzed? Who goes next? Florsheim, you get to go next. You get to swing with your axe. Nice! I'm a dwarf, and I swing with my hammer at the back of this creature, trying to bash its legs into the ground. It's bash the carapace of its body. It's like a centipede with all these long legs. And I roll a 6, which will only hit armor class 10, has like an armor class of 7. So I missed. It was too fast for me. I was swinging where I thought it was, and it quickly went and behind me, and it got to the halfling, and I didn't react in time. But now that I have possession of myself, I'm going to jump in down into the hole as long as it's not too far down. It's not too far down, right? It's about 6 feet down in there. You see that maybe like a glint of bone
down there. So and then a glint of metal as well. There could be, you know, more creatures, or but it looks like it stops, you know, at about 6 feet, and it may go back and be a tunnel, or it might just be like a small cave. There's a door still covering part of it. Yeah, I'm gonna go back in there, cut off the monster's retreat. So I jump down into the hole in case there's anything in there. I'm ready. I have infravision with my dwarven eyes, and I can see in the dark. Maybe it takes a moment for them to adjust. So I'm gonna close one of my eyes right now before I jump in. Then I jump in, having lost, unfortunately, my sense of three-dimensional space. So maybe it's hard to land on my feet. But then I open my eyes again and look infrared. In the infravision, if there's anything glowing in there, I know, okay, that's warm, that's live. A skeleton, you know, I'm not afraid of a skeleton. I've been in a graveyard. I used to sleep in a graveyard at night. When I couldn't sleep well, then I would lie down on the stones in the graveyard and look up and just feel the stone. As a dwarf, you love stone, even the stones of death. Oh, and we know that you're, as an outcast of a clan, Florsheim, we know how you feel about stone. Getting stoned, as you do as a dwarf. So, lying on stone is how I'm stoned. Right. Okay, so, and then, Maximilian, you charge around. You actually go last with your two-handed sword. Mirror Man, did you want to do anything? You have this 10-foot-long pole in your hand.
I'm going to throw a dagger, one of my cheaper daggers that I have. I have like 10 of these daggers. I'm just going to throw it. I'm not the great shot, but I'm not horrible. And I see where it's moving to. I anticipate where it's going, and I throw it to the place where it will be by the time the dagger arrives. I rolled a 10. Would hit something with an armor class of 9, and I missed. But I did manage to have it go thwing into the ground, which is nice, because I hate it when I throw a dagger and it doesn't go thwing into the ground, it just skids on the ground. I hate it when that happens. So at least I got to throw it, and it went thwing into the ground, and I consider it a near miss, and I smile in a small way to myself, as if reminding myself to talk to myself about this later.
Okay, that's great. You do in fact miss. And now it's up to you, Maximilian. You could finish this thing. It's really gotten hurt from this arrow in its eye. It has these large eyes and this kind of tentacle face. But the eyes are, you know, they're largely spectacle. You know, they're not spectacles. They're there for show. They can't see that well. But he can smell or something. He or she, it knows where you are.
Yeah, it's feeling me, but I run around to the side, but then it popped out, and as it's popping out, I find I get my sword around. Takes me a minute. Whom! And I try to just bisect it in sections. I bisect the sections and just chop, chop, chop. It's a good swing. And I roll a 14, which is a hit. And it does, I do d10 damage plus 1. Due to my strength, I got 9 plus 1 is 10 damage, and I cut it, I chop it, and it's dead.
Yes, you killed it. You did indeed, you chopped it right in half.
I chop it right in half, and it was like, chop again, and then chop it again. Because you never know, I think you've got to kill each section. So I'll just chop it in half, and then each section, one after another after another. And it's gooey as you're chopping it, it's up, it just starts, it squirts out everywhere.
And you actually have to make a saving throw versus paralysis, just because you're just the gunk and the goo from this chopping is just getting everywhere. And you failed your save at a 6.
Oh, but it's not fair. It just
That's right. You become paralyzed. I mean, that's the kind of thing I might do as a DM, because then at least somebody gets to be paralyzed. But then somebody might say like, oh no, that's not fair. But isn't it fun? I mean, he's the one who's chopping it all to pieces, you know. It just only makes sense that that it would splatter up. Any paralyzed will recover in 3 turns, half hour, unharmed. Well, that is pretty severe. 30 minutes. Especially since they've only got a short window of time. Why don't we say that he's paralyzed, but that it's not, since it's not from the tentacles, it's not as strong acting of a poison. And let's say he's paralyzed for 3d6 turns. Or rounds, rather. Which is... I got 9. Okay. And they just spent one round of this combat, so that would be one turn altogether, 10 minutes. You chop up this guy, and in so doing, you reveal the paralysis glands in the last section of the body. And there are two of these glands. Now, unfortunately, when you chop that section, you cut one of those glands in half, and it splattered up on you, and you kind of slowly, like this tingling sensation that went slowly down from your face and down through your body, freezing your muscles. The way it paralyzes you is it causes all of your muscles to freeze and harden.
It's like a good workout, isn't it? I feel the pump. Oh, I feel the pump.
You feel the pump. That's right. So now,
I notice, Mirrorman Cloud Hair here, that those are the paralysis glands. I just put it together. I see him chopping, and I see the squirt coming out, and I see him freeze up, and I think, oh, that could be very useful for us and our endeavors. And so I'm just going to take a section of cloth, maybe just rip a section of cloth from the saddlebag, or if we have a spare section of cloth. Oh, we have a small sack. I'm going to take one of Florsheim's sacks, just happens to be tied to the horse, and if there's something in it, I'll just dump it on the ground, maybe some rations or something. I don't think we need those right now. I'll just, like, sort of put them somewhere, you know, like, stuff them into the saddlebag. And then I'll take that sack and I'll carefully put the paralysis gland inside the sack. It's exciting. All right. And meanwhile, Florsheim is down in the hole. Okay, you find a skeleton at the bottom of the hole. It's mostly covered by treasure. There's also treasure in the hole. It's a short, man-like creature whose head is similar to a dog's. It doesn't move, and it, in fact, is only a skeleton. Kobolds act and live much like goblins, but are a different race. They're smaller. They're very small. They're shorter even than halflings and dwarves. Or they're about the size of halflings. Which is to say, what, 3 feet tall? Okay, you carefully gather the treasure, putting it into sacks and dividing it among yourselves to balance the load. Well, if you want, you can just put it in the saddlebags of the horse. The coins are all copper and silver, about 1,000 of each. Now, your horse's maximum carrying capacity is 2,000 coins. So you would max out the horse, and you would have to dump out a bunch of your stuff. And copper... Well, is this copper really worth it? I mean, do we really want to take all this copper? I'm kind of thinking, no... Let's just leave it in the hole. Maybe we'll just take the silver, fill one saddlebag with silver and have at it. And save some room for some other nicer treasure down the way. Don't you think, everybody? And Maximilian is just frozen still. He's drooling. Foghorn Pete, what do you think?
Well... I have this magical bag. I would love to try the copper on this magical bag. I'll throw my magical bag down I got this magical bag that's really great. And why I'd love to try out my magical bag. Why don't I throw my magical bag down that I got in the inn and just see what goes in and see what happens to it. I have the feeling that it might be a really special bag, like a bag of holding, or it might be cursed in some way. I don't know. Let's just see what happens. Okay, so you throw down the bag, and Florsheim, I'll fill the bag. This sounds fine to me. I'll fill the bag with the copper coins, filling it up. I love being in this hole under the ground. It's where I belong. I like to interface. I want to check carefully to see if I can detect anything there. I'll take a moment to see if there's a secret passage that leads out of this area. Okay, I will roll. Now, this will take you about the length of time that it will take your comrade to wake up from being paralyzed. And you do not notice any any new structures here, any secrets of any kind. You feel fairly confident that it is just a self-contained hole, that this creature intelligently built itself a trap like a spider might, you know, where it hides here and then it jumps up and attacks people who are coming. Now, time has passed. It's 13 minutes until the woman wakes up, and it is 20 minutes until your pursuit arrives. And now Maximilian is awake. Now, every 20 minutes, I'm supposed to roll to see if there's a random encounter. But I don't do that yet. I'll do that in another 10 minutes. So the sun is going down. It's kind of a pink and purple sky. A crow leaps up from the battlements of this little castle, as if startled. Ah! Ah! And flaps. Flaps away towards the sun. It seems like a sign. You hear a loud boom. As you gather a treasure, you hear a loud boom. You see that the main gateway is closed. Although the huge outer doors lie here, rotting, there are a pair of inner doors. And the inner doors have been closed. The only entrance now is the 10-foot-wide hole in the wall off to the left. Well, clearly, this is a trap, as you suspected, Florsheim. And now that Maximilian is back with us, which I'm glad about, I think we don't have to fall for this trap. They clearly want us to go through the hole. I say we boost up Foghorn Pete, and he goes over the side. We can use the horse to give us 6 feet of space. Then I can stand on top of the horse, or better yet, Maximilian can stand on top of the horse to give us another 6 feet. That's 12 feet right there. Then all you have to do, Foghorn, is climb the remaining 38 feet. If we're lucky, you only have to make 3 checks, maybe 4. And then you'll get over there, and you'll be great, and you'll be happy, and we'll be happening. We're party. We're going to bring the party to this party. What do the rest of you guys think about that plan?
I love to be helpful and help people out and do all this stuff, but it sounds a little bit risky to me if I were to fall down to the ground. So maybe if we can set something up where if I fall, somebody catches me. Maybe a rope is thrown. Maybe we tie a rope to a brick and throw it over the wall, and then I climb up that rope. Want a little more assurance before I just go climbing over a rickety stone wall. I'm not asking a lot.
Deep special ability table. Climb walls. You have an 87% chance. That's pretty good.
Well, you know, I hear what he's saying now, and this is what I'm thinking. I'll stand on the horse, he can climb up me, and then Maximilian?
Yeah. Oh, finally move again. Ah. Oh, it was an intense workout. Oh, I'm sweating. Wow. Yeah? I'll do it. I can catch him when he falls, if he falls.
You know, the door just closed. It's probably closed by someone or by a very strong wind, which you didn't feel, or by a mechanism. Where do you want to climb over in relation to that?
Why don't we climb over halfway between the gaping hole and the door? That way, if they're waiting for us at the gaping hole, then we can be halfway to that. And if they're waiting for us at the door, we're halfway to that. And if they're at both, then we're right in the middle of them, and oh no, you know, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, and when I climb over, I'm going to have my bow and arrow, you know, ready, and when I get to the top of the wall, how wide is the wall?
It looks like the walls are about 10 feet wide.
Yeah, so when I get to the top of the wall, then I'll fire down with the arrows at the guys.
Okay, great. Now, the only other risk here is that you will make a block go loose that will fall down and hit the horse or you or Mirror Man or Maximilian, whoever happens to be. Now, Florsheim, are you...
I'm a dwarf. I'm going to
put the girl in the hole and cover the hole with the doors, and hopefully they're too heavy and she'll be trapped down there, but she'll be safe. And I try to make it a little bit cozy by moving the skeletons to one side and I put her on the other side.